Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Lunatics Radio Hour podcast. I'm Abby Brinker. I'm here with Alan Kudan.
Hello.
And today we have a new kind of episode for you. A very fun, exciting type of episode.
I wouldn't say it's new. I'd say it's new for us.
Yes, sure. It has been done before.
It has.
We're late to the game.
We are.
What else is new? But I don't know. I'm excited. I'm really excited about it. I think this is my, here, listen to my POV, okay? Mm-hmm. So we have had recently some pretty intense, dark, historically thick episodes, right? We have necromancy, Grim Reaper.
I think the word you're looking for is slog.
Reincarnation. No, I mean, we love them, right? We had fun with them. But we wanted to just take a little bit of a little beat, an energetic refresh, if you will.
Sure.
And just come at you with something super fun and lighthearted and hopefully a little bit scary and spooky, but mostly just...
Spooky.
Mostly just spooky, yeah, and a little bit scary.
I think some of these tales are going to be bone-chilling.
I think so, too. So here's the deal. We have had some submissions come in from friends of the pod who have sent in creepy stories, creepy things that have happened to them, real-life paranormal encounters, the scariest moments of their lives. And we have some really good ones, and there's some more coming in, so hopefully we can do... another episode like this in the near future.
I'd like to say that we selected the best of the best, but mm-hmm. We didn't do that. We just took the first five, and here they are. No idea what they are.
Yes.
This is going to be completely new for both of us.
Exactly. So if you out there, a listener, want to share anything with us, something spooky that has happened to you, a crazy dream, it doesn't matter as long as it has happened to you. Or if you want to write a story.
Or, you know what?
Send us just email us.
Everything.
Yeah. We want to feature you on the show. So email us at filmsaboutlunatics@gmail.com. Or of course you can go to thelunaticsproject.com and click on submit to send us text that way.
We already have a number of other ones that are definitely going into part two.
Yeah.
Not part two. The next time we do this.
Yeah.
If exactly. This is successful, maybe this is going to be terrible.
Maybe. You tell us, I guess, right?
Or don't. We're sensitive.
That's the truest thing you've ever said. Oh man. All right, so let us kick things off with a spooky real life encounter. This really happened.
Mm-hmm. And to keep some level of anonymity.
To keep some level of anonymity.
Anonymity.
It is
anonymity.
Anonymity. It was written in by Jess from Connecticut. Here we go. Our old house was on a cul-de-sac with two other homes, and we had over an acre of woods in the backyard. One afternoon, while home alone, my dogs were outside and started barking. I opened the back door to tell them to quiet down when I realized they were both snarling with their hair raised up. I did a quick scan of the backyard and noticed a tall figure dressed in black with a hood on dart behind a tree just past my pool. I grabbed my dogs and pulled them inside, locked the door, and peered out of my kitchen window. I anxiously waited for a minute and my dog settled down. I started to think my eyes were playing tricks on me in the dusk, but then I saw the figure again, crouch down, and start making their way towards my pool. I grabbed my phone and dialed 911 as I watched them make a run for my neighbor's yard and climbed under the large wooden playscape. The dispatcher told me they had two officers on the way to my house. I checked all the doors to make sure they were locked and tried to see if there was any movement in the backyard. Suddenly, there was a pounding on my door. I walked over towards my picture window, trying to stay out of view, and felt relieved to see the cop cars. One officer with a canine unit was headed into my backyard. The officer asked me for a description, but I was only able to tell him that the figure was maybe about 6 feet tall and fairly thin. He told me they would be in contact with an update, and he left on foot. About an hour later, the officer was back at my door to tell me that a high schooler that lived about a half mile down the road had gone for a walk to smoke and didn't want anyone to see him, so he went into the woods. The canine unit had tracked right back to his house, and with the start of spring break, I'm sure I made it a terrible week by calling the cops. For future reference, if you're sneaking around a random person's backyard at dusk, wearing all black and a hood, but you're just getting high, turn around and give your freaked out neighbor a wave so they don't think you're a murderer. Thank you for that submission, Jess.
You didn't finish reading the story.
No, and I won't.
The second, the last part says, I blame Abby for my mind immediately going to panic mode, or maybe my mom. When I was in middle school, one day she pointed out a stone wall near our house where the serial killer in town when she was a teenager had hid body parts. But that's another story. And seemingly a very interesting story. Thank you, Jess from Connecticut.
So yes, Jess, my best friend. So
we, anonymous best friend.
We had, there's a Michael Ross was a serial killer that lived in our town before me and Jess were there. But
who's her mom, Michael Ross?
He's a serial killer.
Oh, so Michael Ross is an old time serial killer.
Yeah. Well, like from the 70s.
Right. Not from like 90s.
They brought him to our middle school to be like held and questioned when they caught him because there's no police station in town.
So they just put him in school for the day?
I think it was like the summer weekend. You know, there was nobody there. There wasn't students there.
So they didn't just like put him in detention?
No. No, he went to jail.
What became of Michael Ross?
He's in jail.
What'd he do?
I don't remember if he got the death penalty or not. There's a book that somebody wrote about him recently.
He hid body parts?
No, he killed a lot of women. He like raped and killed a bunch of women.
Oh, one of those.
Young girls, yeah.
That's lame.
Yeah, he sucks. We hate him.
Shouldn't have done that, Michael.
Should not have, no. So what did you think of Jess's story?
I thought it was really cool. I think we can all relate to being home and you think you see something nefarious in your backyard. I was expecting this story to be like, oh, they found, like, they never found anybody. It was probably just my imagination.
Yeah.
But to get the actual closure of it was just a kid getting stoned, that was very rewarding.
Yeah. I remember when it happened and she called me. It's also just like to see somebody crouching, like army crawling around your backyard. Like, it's funny now because you're like, oh, it was a teenager.
It was stoned and scared. Yeah.
Which is like so funny. But, you know, when you don't know that at all, you're like, holy shit. Especially like in, you know, rural Connecticut and it's just woods everywhere. You're like, what the fuck is going on? It's so funny.
I did also like her little advice there at the end. Like, listen, if you want to be creepy in the woods, here's what you should do.
Yeah, just give a little wave.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
That hadn't considered, I would just be like, be better at hiding.
Right.
You know, no. be even creepier.
No.
Or just scare them so thoroughly that they don't even want to call the cops.
Yeah. It's also, can we just for a second, like, reflect on the teenage logic of, I want to get away with smoking weed. So instead of like going to all of the woods that are everywhere in this neighborhood, I'm going to go into my neighbor's backyard and like hope that that's the thing that doesn't get me caught.
Right.
Like, oh my goodness, teenagers.
They're dumb. It's amazing they make it to be adults.
Yeah. All right, next story.
Okay. Well, who's up next?
John from Ohio.
Okay, John from Ohio. Here we go. Back in college, around 1999, I was prone to all-night Magic the Gathering sessions with a few of my friends. We'd start around 7 p.m. on Friday night and go until very late, often until the sun came up. One evening in particular, I should say morning, I had just arrived home from such an all-nighter. It was fall semester, mid-October, around 3:30 a.m., so the air was cold, but not wintry. The sky was clear, dark, and cloudless, and the leaves were all off the trees, so I had a good open view of the sky as I walked the 40 yards from my car on the street to my front door. The town I lived in at the time is an old iron community in the Ohio foothills of Appalachia. Nothing flies over of any consequence, except maybe the fighter jets at the beginning of the Memorial Day parade every year. The closest Air Force presence is almost 150 miles away in Dayton. It's quiet, unless the trains are rumbling by and blowing their whistles on their way to somewhere else. I say all that to stress how very little happens outside of the ordinary in that small town. But this night was a bit different. I remember, with absolute clarity, that I was halfway to my front door, zipping my hoodie against the chill, with my bag shouldered and my cards tucked under one arm. You know how sometimes events have a way of searing into your brain if they jar you out of your routine? I was not tired or even fatigued. In fact, I was home earlier than usual by at least an hour, in some attempt to assuage the wrath of my parents, whom I had neglected to call yet again regarding my whereabouts. And so I was alert and prepared to enter the house as quietly as possible. I happened to glance up at the sky, just to see the stars. Except at this particular moment, I saw more than stars. There were two lights, larger than anything in the night sky with the exception of the moon, but only perhaps only two or three times as large as the biggest star I've ever seen. One was a brilliant white, and the other was a pale orange color. I remember at the time thinking it was the color of luminescent dreamsicle. These two lights, had they been stationary, or even moving steadily in the same direction, I'd had written off as a plane, or interesting astronomical or atmospheric phenomena. That isn't how they behave, though. I watched for some time, more than a few seconds, less than a minute. The white light remained still sometimes, most of the time. The orange light stayed in motion almost constantly. They moved independently, but definitely in relation to one another. In what I'd call an aerial dance, that was something like an interwoven figure eight. As I said, the orange light always moved, while the white light sometimes simply stopped and let the orange light continue weaving around it. And with the exception of ambient small-town noise, all was utterly quiet in the way only the wee hours can be. No plane engines, no chop of helicopter blades, nothing. I stared. I checked my own awareness, certain I had to be hallucinating. But it was cold and real outside, and I was mentally present for the whole encounter. At some point, I tore my eyes away from the display in the sky to see I had a camera in my bag. In 1999, disposable point-and-shoot Kodaks were ubiquitous. But I didn't happen to have anything that night. When I looked back to find the lights again, though, they were gone. Or at least they had moved to a part of the sky that I could not see. I stared up for at least another 5 minutes, hoping to catch sight of the lights again, but never did. Eventually, I went inside. Naturally, I didn't go right to sleep. I sat there in my room, trying to figure out what I had just seen. As far as I know, there were no reports about it anywhere else, and no one else I know encountered anything like it. I can't say with certainty that I know what I saw, but I can say that I have never seen anything else like it.
Holy cow, a real-life UFO story.
I mean, a UFO in the literal sense of the word.
Yeah, I love that. That's so creepy and chilling to me.
Yeah.
To just be looking up and knowing that you're not near a base, especially now with all of the, you know, reports that the Air Force is confirming that are UFO. I'm just saying that the Air Force, so everyone, I hope you are aware that the Air Force of the United States is confirming the not only the existence of UFOs, but also that a bunch of uptick in activity we've seen recently is indeed unidentified flying objects.
Yes, what they are confirming is that people are showing pictures or accounts and they're like, wasn't us. That's it.
That's big.
Sure. It's been
their policy that they've never commented on this before. So this is, and we've all seen the video of the Canadian Prime Minister, okay?
We have.
Where he goes on and on and on about the existence of aliens in the United States program and Canadian program.
Haven't seen it.
Listen, the dawn of the age of aliens is here, my friends.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see, but I put $5 on it.
I will take that bet. When is the statute of limitations up?
1 year from now.
1 year. Okay, $5 bet.
Yeah.
From this date.
Yeah, somebody remind us.
That we will have confirmed existence of sentient alien life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking they're going to find some freaking algae on Mars. That doesn't count.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Okay.
All right. Tall grays.
The only thing that I want to say. So I knew this guy. He was a very, very talented director of photography.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen this guy in years, but I ran into him on a set, and he was wearing these super thick, like, Coke bottle glasses.
Yeah.
And previously, he had not worn glasses. And so, you know, I just made a comment like, hey, you like your glasses. And, you know, it was kind of a sore spot for him. He just got kind of sad.
Oh.
And I wasn't sure what, you know, yeah. he recovered quickly, but it was because one day he was just in either, I think he was just in his home.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he just see these lights floating in front of him. Just like very gently, just like floating in like full 3D.
Yeah.
And like he thought he was hallucinating. They don't go away. or like if or the, either they did go away or they came back or something. It was to the point where like he got really freaked out, so he called someone, or he called a doctor, you know. Yeah. He got into a doctor very quickly, and after he explained this phenomena that he was seeing, they immediately rushed him into surgery. It's caused by something inside his eye that had detached.
Oh my goodness.
And had they not done emergency surgery when they did, he'd be blind.
Oh my goodness. That's like, eye stuff is so scary.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. I'm so glad that they caught it so soon.
Mm-hmm. But he has, I mean, obviously he has very degenerated eyes at this point.
Yeah.
And he was a director of photography.
Oh, that's too bad.
So yeah, with the glasses, he was able to have vision, but right. It wasn't great.
Right. Wow. That's so scary.
Yeah.
I'm glad they saved his sight though.
Yeah, absolutely. So I certainly hope that, fortunately, eye technology in general, I think, has come like leaps and bounds even just the last 10 years.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's probably been almost 10 years since I saw this guy. Regardless, if you are seeing lights, A, make sure it's not a UFO.
Yeah.
If it is a UFO,
call the New York Times.
You're fine. But if it's not a UFO, call a doctor.
Right. Best case scenario, it's a UFO.
Best case scenario.
Worst case scenario.
They're coming and being like, you're our only hope. And they just give you powers.
Powers, yeah. Yeah. I was thinking cash, but powers might
Why
be
would they have cash on them?
Because they Googled how to communicate with humans, you know?
That's right.
Just counterfeit cash.
I thought love was the universal language.
Yeah, well, we know that's not true. Mm. Shall we hear from Lena in New York City?
Yes.
My elementary school was PS1, and during my last year before graduating, there was a lot of buzz and excitement when the school celebrated its centennial anniversary. They also began a renovation project for the roof. I recalled vividly two events that are 110% paranormal. I will also add that there are tons of rumors on what the school was built on, from a graveyard to a mental institution to a woman's shelter. The first event occurred when our class was returning back to the classroom from the library. We took the main stairwell back to the fifth floor. The top floor was the attic/roof, which was gated off. Our class took a pause in the hallway, which snaked around to the side of the building. I was in the back of the line chatting with my friends and leaned on one of the smaller staircase doors. And as the class began to move ahead, I noticed the door had an opposition force. I thought it was the wind and playfully leaned back and bounced backward, but the door did not nudge open. And that's when I decided to turn around. I saw an old figure man staring back at me with a long white beard. Skinny, with beat-up overalls and dirt on him, carrying an oil lantern in one hand. He was neither transparent nor solid. I jetted as fast as I could back to catch up with the class as they were entering the classroom. My friends asked me what was wrong, and I told them what I saw. Of course, they said that that's not possible. They went back with me to the spot, and the side stairwell was empty. The second event took place in the early mornings, when my best friend and I would volunteer to come up and set up the classroom with my teacher. We used to walk over together with one of our parents as we lived across the street from one another. This one particular morning, we found ourselves waiting for our teacher for quite some time. So I volunteered to go to the main office and see if anyone could help us. I decided to take the smaller stairwell on one end of the school, and to my surprise, when I pushed open the door, I heard kids running around, sneakers squeaking and balls bouncing. It sounded like recess time. There is absolutely zero possibility for activity of that sort in the stairwell. And even if the indoor yard was opened and the sound was echoing up there, there are no kids in the building at that hour. I thought I was hearing things, and I peered down one flight of stairs. I don't know why I would think that that would be helpful then, from the doorway. I was puzzled and terrified, so I gently closed the door and ran back to my best friend, who I told what I heard. She didn't believe me, so I had her come with me, and we pushed the door open, and she heard the same thing, except she was braver and went down one flight and then ran back up quietly. We were both scared, and we sat back down in front of the classroom unsure what to do. At that moment, our teacher finally showed up, who we told the story to, and she told us it was our imagination. Isn't that always how these things end?
Yeah, it's not. Sometimes they say, we'll look into it, and they send their dog and they catch kids smoking weed.
That's true, yes.
But 9 times out of 10, yes, they just say, it's nothing. Yeah. Kind of like me right now. Yeah, that's nothing. Sound does weird things.
you know, I don't know. The first part, I think they're both freaky. I mean, if you have two people, two kids who hear the same thing, sure, it doesn't, maybe it's not paranormal basketball ghosts, but it could be, it's some kind of weird, freaky phenomenon.
I think it is a phenomena for sure. Mm-hmm. I do not think it was steeped in the paranormal.
What about her first incident?
100%, 110% paranormal.
That's what I said.
You don't just turn around and hallucinate that type of guy without,
especially when you're drugs. In middle school.
Okay, so she was probably on drugs.
No, she wasn't.
It's so interesting though that she, how these like ghosts and apparitions often appear to be like from such olden times. Mm-hmm. Like he had an oil lantern. It's scary as hell. Why is that scary?
It's almost like Uncanny Valley, right? Where it's like, you know, it would be more familiar. Like if you saw somebody who was from a modern day, would it be as scary? I don't know.
Who can say?
Because it feels more otherworldly, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe.
History's scary. Look at all the fucked up shit humanity's done.
I'd be very curious to see, if you want to just take a quick note to look into the history of PS1.
Yeah.
Because I think that's very cool. You know, you look at New York, mm-hmm. which especially, you know, being one of the most populous cities in the world, right?
Yes.
Or at least dense or whatever it is. It holds some metric. But it's an island. So unlike a lot of American cities that just sprawl out, this is very, very contained. Because, you know, island. So
yeah.
When something new needs to be built, it needs to be built on the framework of something existing. Mm-hmm. And either they demolish it or they relocate it or something. But, you know, all this ground just gets reused and reused and reused over the years.
Yep.
There's so much rich history. And actually, I was just talking about this with another camera guy just a couple days ago, how you even look at the streets, you know, over in Hudson Yard.
Yeah.
How they're developing these huge high rises and building all these brand new things, right? But the land is anything but new. And so as the construction vehicles keep ripping up the streets, because they're not repaving them just yet, because they're just going to keep damaged, they're ripping up the asphalt and you just see these beautiful cobblestone streets underneath.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
But only like little pieces.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm very against cobblestones, but that's a whole other discussion.
I'm very pro cobblestones, but we can get into it another day.
It's very, very beautiful. I'll give you that. However, it does not advocate for non-vehicular transportation.
Bikes?
Have you biked over cobblestones?
No, you take the other street.
It's freaking murderous.
Don't try riding a
skateboard over it. It's impossible.
Don't do it then. Well, skateboard down the next street.
Anyways.
Okay.
the point is that everywhere in New York has such a rich history.
Yeah.
And who even knows what that history is? And the answer is like a lot of it is just straight up lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have the Second Avenue subway that took 100 years to build.
Yeah.
Technically. It got put onto the books 100 years before it was finished. Mm-hmm. But it did, you know, it wasn't actually, construction didn't actually start until fairly recently, all things considered.
Yeah.
But it took so, so long to build just that very small strip that they completed. It's very far from done. Simply because as they would dig, they kept finding things.
Yeah.
They would find pipes, cables, cellars, full tunnels, all these things that, or, you know, just underground buildings, you know, all these things that aren't on any map in existence.
Yeah.
Simply because it's been lost over the years. And if it's not charted, they just can't bowl through it. You know, it's very similar to France.
I was just going to say, think about even European cities or cities not in the U.S. that are so much older.
Mm-hmm. That's why they can't just shamelessly put up these high-rise buildings, because the ground can't support it. Everything, there's just honeycombed and interwoven with so much history. And what that history is, of course, you know, there's a good chance that it's something spooky.
Yeah, totally. If you have like weird stories like that about your city, you know, either folklore or also like weird objects that turned up, that would be cool to hear about.
Totally.
Yeah.
On to the next.
On to the next. You're up.
Full disclosure. I couldn't remember how the story went, so I had to look it up and found a newspaper article from 1961. When I was in college, my fraternity used to give midnight mystery tours and tell a bunch of legends and stuff about campus, most of which were terribly embellished. One of my favorites was from Cobb Dormitory, where there was a story about two students who mysteriously died of cyanide poisoning after eating milkshakes. But no poison was found. No motive. I don't even think they were sure it was cyanide.
I mean, listen, if you are in college and two of your classmates die after having milkshakes from the cafeteria, mm-hmm. and people think it's poison, like that, can you imagine how scared you would be as a college student?
Sure.
Terrifying. I also like that his fraternity gave, what did he call them? Midnight mystery tours?
Midnight mystery tours.
I love that.
I mean, that's really cool. And of course they need, you know, little urban legends to grow and fester.
Yeah. He sent the original article too, the newspaper article. It was cool to see.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's just a scary story. It's just like a freaky thing that happened, like one of those unexplained that might seem small, but also to those parents or, you know, families, like, it's terrible.
And I think cyanide poisoning is pretty rare, you know? It seems like it would have to be deliberate. Also, it's like, it can't just be like mixed in with the milkshakes because more than two would die.
Yeah, I wonder if they like investigated the person who made the milkshakes. Probably, I guess.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it does seem very targeted. I don't imagine only two people at that school got milkshakes that day.
Right, and it's not like, oh, well, they just didn't have enough to get sick. It's like, you have a little drop of cyanide, you're done.
Is there like a scale of most lethal poisons, or like ones that are hardest to get or untraceable? Like, I wonder where, you know, where does it fall in the badass poison scale?
I mean, the answer is yes. Cyanide is a natural occurring poison, however.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So it's very funny when people are like, I'm all natural. I only eat things that are natural because they're good for you. It's like, well, guess what? Cyanide's natural.
That's a good counter argument.
Yeah. And so, like, yes, it can be extracted from multiple sources.
Yeah.
However, of course, it's not like a very easy thing to do.
Right.
I'm making assumptions here.
Right.
Because otherwise I feel like cyanide would be a far more ubiquitous substance in our world for nefarious reasons.
Totally. Yeah. Final story?
Final story.
This is from Amber in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Mom had once again tired of all of the old farts in Florida. So she and Pop Chuck moved up to Jersey to be closer to the family. The first year, the family drove out to Jersey to visit them. The girls were thoroughly disappointed. Florida had meant pools and sunshine. But what did Jersey have to offer them? Nothing, that's what. As the three young girls fought for space on the sleeper sofa, Chuck warned, "Now this new house we have is right in the heart of devil country," he said, enjoying terrorizing the girls. "You know about the Jersey devil, right? You came prepared?" The girls' eyes widened as they shook their heads in unison. No, they did not know of the Jersey devil. Of course they were unprepared. This infuriated and terrified the oldest girl. Why had no one mentioned it before they got here? How were they supposed to prepare for monsters they didn't even know existed? Her breaths were already shortening and quickening. She did not want to hear the rest of the tale, but now she needed all the information she could get to protect her family. She worried maybe the other girls were too young to handle this. "The Jersey devil is the meanest, nastiest little devil anywhere on earth. If you hear tapping on the window tonight, don't look outside. It's the Jersey devil come to take you away. They say so much as looking at him can drive a grown man insane, so you can see how three little girls like you don't stand a chance," he continued. "That's not true," shouted one of the girls, though none of them were sure which. "I don't know," Pop teased as he left the girls alone for the evening. After a short debate over sleeping with the light on and the insistence that the youngest not wet the bed, two of the girls fell asleep, while the oldest squeezed her eyes shut, telling herself over and over, "It's not true. It's not true. It's not true. It's not." The next morning, the oldest confronted Mom. Why had no one told them? How could they come here? "Chuck was just playing a mean trick on you. There's no such thing as this Jersey Devil, and he should not have told you there was." The girl was unconvinced. A couple years passed with similar visits before Mom grew tired of the cold, so she packed up Chuck and the pair moved back down to Florida. On their way down, they came out to visit the family. The oldest girl had just finished clearing space in her closet for the visit when her sister came in with an idea. Now, growing up in a rural red state comes with a very specific type of public school education, with problematic definitions of inclusivity and representation. One such art teacher's attempt consisted of creating prehistoric African devil masks out of construction paper in honor of Black History Month. The girls grabbed the paper mask and ran downstairs. "Mom," they called. "You know how Mom and Pop are staying in my room? Yeah, so I cleared the space in the closet like you told me, but can we hang this in there to get Chuck back for the Jersey Devil stuff?" Mom rolled her eyes, but told them to go for it. That evening, while everyone was getting ready for bed, a scream suddenly echoed through the home, followed by a high-pitched cackle. Pop had opened the closet, screamed at the sight of the girls' masks, and fallen backwards, which had caused Mom to absolutely lose her shit laughing. He came down the stairs furious at being the butt of the joke and demanded, "What the hell is this?" The girl simply looked over, as if bored, and said flatly, "Huh, looks like the Jersey Devil followed you here." This wasn't the end of Chuck picking on the girls, but it was the first time he realized he was outmatched. It reminds me of the time, do you remember when you were young, those like ferrets attached to those like automatic balls that moved around?
What do you mean when you were young? They're still great.
I haven't thought of them in 20 years, but when we were little,
it's because you haven't been to the mall in a while.
Yeah, my sister put one in our parents' bed, and my dad lost his shit.
I feel like your cat would like it.
Yeah, actually, that would be a great cat toy. Oh man, you said the mall, and now I'm thinking of like Furbies and Tamagotchis and all my favorite friends.
Those are your favorite friends?
They were.
Furbies and Tamagotchis.
Loved them.
I never had either.
Really? You never had a Tamagotchi?
No.
Wow.
I got it like towards the end of the fad, but okay. It wasn't a Tamagotchi. It was like an off-brand.
I have a Tamagotchi now.
Cool. how's that going?
So. I haven't tended it to a while, but I bought it a few years ago.
Neat.
I guess so. Anyway.
Do they hold up?
I prefer the old model. This one was like too modern for me. Well, so this was a real life paranormal ghost funny story episode.
Yeah.
A first, I guess, user generated content episode.
I mean, it's first off, it's always just fun to have people like the response to this was instantaneous.
Yeah, it really was. It was amazing.
Like you just sent out via the newsletter and you got a whole bunch of responses by the end of the day, and we just took the first five and made an episode.
Yep. So we definitely have more, and we would love if you would write in too, because we would love to keep doing these.
Also, if you would like to be on the newsletter to get more updates from this, how do they do that?
If you go to lunaticsproject.com, you can join our mailing list.
Is that it? Click a button?
Yeah. You can also DM me or reach me on email. I'm very accessible.
Cool.
I don't know if that's cool, but it's the truth.
Well, overall, I feel like this went very well, and I'm excited. Now that we set the framework for like what it can be, mm-hmm. just like write in spooky stuff, I'm sure there's at least one person out there that just heard this episode and is like, oh, wow, I have such a cool story to tell.
There's something very intimate and cool, I think, about hearing these firsthand stories of moments like, you know, a fear that have stuck with people from, you know, or mystery. From different stages of their life. And, you know, we've shared our moments of that. But I don't know. I think it's cool to hear about other people's because you're like, oh, yeah. Like, it sparks so many things in your head, you know? Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. Get in touch with us. And thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Oh, and on an unrelated note, completely irrelevant.
Oh, yes?
I feel like now is an appropriate time to plug Michael Crosa and Jollyville Radio for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing podcast / entertainment variety show.
Yeah. And same to our friend John over at Fado. Make sure you subscribe to both Fado podcast and Jollyville Radio, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Until next time.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening. If you'd like some bonus content, consider supporting us on Patreon to access our patron-exclusive podcast, Horror Movie Club.
Also, head to lunaticsproject.com to check out our spooky merch and apparel.
You can find us at Lunatics Project on Twitter and TikTok, and The Lunatics Project on Instagram and YouTube, where you'll find our short horror films, cemetery tours, and so much more.
And please rate and review. A little feedback goes a long way to help us grow and get more content out there.
Our cover art is by Pilar Kep, and musical bumpers are by Michaela Papa and Jordan Moser.